call the House Committee on Rules to order. Let the record show there is a quorum present. And with that, we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 30. We'll have a short explanation by our administrator, and while we're doing that, we can also invite Ron Burson and
Gina.
I have an aide who's pronounced that Jenna, and I always, and it's spelled exactly the same, so it just always takes me by surprise. And Zedlik?
Yeah.
Okay. I wanted to make sure I had that right, but seeing that's written the same way was hard for me, so. Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Roblin. Members of the committee, Senate Bill 30A engrossed makes changes and clarifications to ethic laws affecting governing public officials, clarifies that certain gift limits apply when the source has a legislative or administrative interest in the public official and not in the public official's agency, clarifies that legislative or administrative interest lies in a decision or vote of the public official. With regard to gift limits, it clarifies that officials may attend receptions or meetings when they are representing a government entity, removes the requirement that 501c3 organizations must receive less than 5% of their funds from for-profits in order to pay for public officials' attendance at conventions, fact-finding meetings, or other meetings, removes the ban on entertainment gifts passed in 2007, making entertainment subject to gift limits, clarifies that gift limits do not apply to gifts from private employment or volunteer work of the public official or relative when given as part of the usual and customary practice and bearing no relationship to the officials holding a public office. With regard to reporting to the Ethics Commission, it eliminates quarterly reporting for public officials, adds quarterly report requirements into the annual statement of economic interest, adds 21 officials to the list of public officials that must file annual SEIs, changes income reporting requirements from listing the 5 most significant sources to listing sources that produce 10% or more of household income, removes the requirement to the list names of relatives and members of household on the Statement of Economic Interest, and prohibits disclosure by the Ethics Commission of any relatives or members of households provided from January 2008 until SB 30 becomes law. With regard to the Ethics Commission, prohibits the Ethics Commission from imposing a penalty on any official who relies in good faith on the Ethics Commission manual or a staff advisory opinion, delays until 2013 a requirement that the Commission develop an electronic filing system and post filings in a format searchable by the public, and requires the Commission to report on the progress of developing an electronic system to the 2011 legislature. Changes the definition of public official by removing the words "or otherwise" from the definition, and conforms the application of ethics laws to both public officials and candidates throughout the chapters. Declares an emergency, takes effect on passage. In 2007, the legislature passed 2 major ethics reform bills, SB 10 and HB 2595. During 2008, the Senate Interim Committee on Rules and Executive Appointments conducted public hearings on concerns about changes in the ethics laws. Senate President Courtney, House Speaker Merkley, appointed an ethics reform review team in 2008, which reviewed complaints and summarized perceived problems. SB 30A is intended to address those concerns.
Thank you very much. And with that, you can decide who would like to start. Ron, thank you.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ron Burson. I'm the Executive Director for the Ethics Commission. And what I thought I could do here today is go down through 30. I think the committee administrator did an excellent job, but maybe we could talk about some of those changes a little more in depth. And we can also look at those changes and kind of meld those over into House Bill 3011 and kind of show where some of the differences are at in these changes. The first change I'd really like to talk about is legislative administrative interest. Both bills change the definition of legislative administrative interest. However, Senate Bill 30 is much more narrow focus in that the focus in SB 30 is to the decision or vote of the public official, whereas in House Bill 3011, it is in the action of vote of a person. So I just, you know, I'm just trying to point out the differences here, but so it would only really affect, and the reason I talk about legislative and administrative interests, I just want to remind the committee members that this is the action of which everything hinges on whether or not you can accept a gift. If there is no legislative administrative interest, you can accept a gift in unlimited amounts. If there is a legislative administrative interest, then you can accept up to $50, or we look at the exceptions that we'll talk about later. So that's what makes it very important that SB 30 is a much narrower definition of legislative administrative interest than what is currently in law with the action and vote of a person. Now, it also removes the part in gifts where the legislative administrative interest is in the government agency. However, I think if on page 11 of the bill, under section 7, when we start talking about statement of economic interest filings, there are certain provisions of the statement of economic interest that you have to file incomes that have from sources that have a legislative administrative interest. In that definition, we go back to using the government agency, and it says that has legislative administrative interest, or that could be reasonably expected to have one in the government agency. And so I just want people to kind of be careful there if we want to make sure we remove the government agency. So anyway, the first one I want to talk about was that. Second thing on Senate Bill 30 is it removes relatives and members of household. I think there's been a lot of bills that want to remove relatives and members of household. Senate Bill 30 does that, as does House Bill 3011. However, Senate Bill 30 goes a step further in requiring the agency to redact former filings, the 2007 filings, and they also currently, I guess there is an amendment now to make it operative upon signature, but as I saw as they engrossed, it would still be required to put members of household and relatives on the SEI through till January of 2010. However, the agency would be required to redact any public records request that included that. But I understand there's an amendment that would make this requirement to actually fill out the SEI with relatives and members of household in the 2008 filing year upon signature of the governor. So it would.
Mr. Chair,
right.
What section of the 30 does this run?
So you're going to ask me hard questions now.
Yeah, I'm trying to learn to do this on the computer. Scrolling. So I can't do what you're doing, which is what I would do.
I'm being told it's in section 27.
27.
Oh, you're talking about way in the back here.
The redacting part, yeah.
Yeah,
redacting part?
Yep.
Yes, it's in section 27.
Which is on 21.
Okay. And which section, Gina, actually takes out the relatives and members of household?
Section 6.
Okay, that's clear up at the front. I can scroll up there real quick. I'm good.
And that would be on page 8. No, 10. Sorry, 10. There's a long list I keep forgetting.
Yeah. Should be on line, down towards the bottom, line 42 and 43.
7, 8. Okay.
So both bills remove relatives and members of household, but Senate Bill 30 actually directs the agency to redact those names that would be requested from previous year's filings, and also becomes active upon signature to eliminate the requirement for the 2008 filing.
And that's the amendments we have, the new amendments that does that correctly.
Amendments.
Yeah. The 34 A's or whatever. A34s.
There's a few.
The A34.
Okay, so now both bills redefine candidates, and so they're, I think Gina can talk about those definitions, but both of them do redefine the definition of candidate. Underneath ORS 244-0205-BE, both bills have provisions to allow for food and beverage. Senate Bill 30 allows it underneath the E exception. You have to be in your official capacity, but you can receive admission, food and beverage, while at a reception meal or meeting. House Bill 3011 allows for food and non-alcoholic beverage, and that was a change to the L exception. So it just allows food and non-alcoholic beverage. So that's kind of the difference between the two. And in Senate Bill 30, you have to be in your official capacity. So wherever you're getting your meal from somebody's paying, you need to be, I would need to be the ethics commissioner at that, or
right.
Not the other.
And the issue, I was going to say, and the issue in that one, it changes what Senate Bill 10 did in a sense, or 200, whichever the one was, which required that you had to speak or be in the agenda. This one removes that and says any public official that's representing as a public official at one of those big deals would be exempt from the meal issue. In 30, it would exempt them from meal and entertainment, all the stuff that happened at that meeting. In 3011, it would exempt everything except alcoholic beverage. Right? I mean, 3011 was...
That's correct.
Okay.
But I don't want to get the impression that Senate Bill 30 only exempts food in a large setting.
Right.
With the word meal in there, I believe that it would exempt a one-on-one type of meal.
Example would be, though, if there was a Rotary Club meeting and I got asked to come as the representative to the Rotary Club, they could provide the meal at the Rotary meeting. Which in the past, unless I was going to speak at the Rotary meeting, they wouldn't have allowed me to accept. Is that correct?
That is correct, Chairman.
Okay. Representative Berger, did you have a question?
Where is this language in the bill?
I'm going to learn.
I want to read it for myself rather than the description of what it says. I'm sorry.
I still believe that you trust me. I
trust you. I trust you. You're the guy that's verified.
It's on page 3, starting on line 12.
Takes me a while to scroll up there.
You'll see that it removes the before whom a public official appears to speak or answer questions, and it replaces that when the public official represents state government as defined in ORS 174.111, local government as defined in 174.116, or special government body as defined in 174.117. So essentially, you have to be in your official capacity when you receive this gift, and then it would be an exception to the gift limitation.
Okay. When the purpose.
And while we're on that page, we'll go ahead and go to F, the F exception, and the change, the F exception now removes the restriction of 501c3s, not-for-profit 501c3s, from receiving less than 5% of their resources from a for-profit corporation. So now you would be able to receive reasonable expenses paid by a unit of federal government, local government, state government, Native American tribe, and so on and so forth, and from a 501c3 without that restriction. So any 501c3, you could receive reasonable expenses, and that would include food, lodging, and travel. And that is, of course, it goes on further to say, for attendance at a convention, fact-finding mission, or trip, or other meeting that the public official is scheduled to deliver a speech, make a presentation, participate on a panel, or represent state, local, or special government body. So it just removes that restriction of the 5% for profit. House Bill 3011 made no changes to that. As we go a little bit further, I believe it's on the next page, under this new O exception. This is an exception that would be on page 4, line 16. This O exception allows for a public official to receive anything of economic value offered to or solicited or received by the public official as part of their usual and customary practice of the person's private business.
So, example, if I'm a county commissioner in some one of these rural counties, and I am also a farmer, and I want to go buy a piece of equipment, and they say, well, this piece of equipment is being used over here, say it's a combine, they could fly me to the combine, I could look at that because I'm trying to buy this as a farmer, I could come back and make a decision, and I wouldn't have taken a gift because it's in my customary other business as being a farmer. Would that be a kind of example?
I believe that's the idea behind this exception. You know, the difficulty for the agency, for the Ethics Commission, is to define usual and customary, which will be difficult for us. But I believe that's the idea behind it. Your example, I think, is a perfect example. And I think that would be usual and customary. You know, there's going to be ones that are much closer to the line that are going to be much more difficult for the agency to answer. And we're really going to have to rely on the person's expertise on what is normal or customary, usual and customary for a farmer buying a combine.
Right.
You know, is it usual and customary to be flown halfway across the country to look at the John Deere plant, or is it usual and customary to go to the local implement dealer and look at the brochures? I don't know that, but that was the idea behind it, sir.
Okay. And if I was in a regular business, a different kind of business, so I had I operated a restaurant, and there was a some kind of restaurant convention, or convention is probably different because that might be under the other one, but particular kind of food deal I wanted to buy, and there were a group of different people who were wanting to sell to me. I could actually go look at those things and deal with things and then make a decision on that. And if there were things that would transpire that were usual and a customary and other restaurant people were doing, I could still continue to do my business the way I had been doing it before.
Chair Roblin, I believe so, yes.
Okay.
Chair Roblin, yep. Members of the committee, Gina Zedlick from Legislative Council. I think that you'll see in the little II, there's also the requirement that it bears no relationship to your public office as
right.
Additional clarification.
Okay, that makes sense too. Yeah, thank you.
Thanks. Okay, underneath Senate Bill 30, it eliminates the ban on entertainment. It simply makes it part of the $50 gift limit, so you can accept up to $50 from a source in a calendar year.
And I guess this one has always been a frustration to me when we did the ban. I was a high school principal. I used to go to lots of activities around the deal. We get things where they would like you to come to a play that happens to be at this school or that school, and I basically said, no, or I'll buy them. I probably still would buy them. If I really thought it was going to help the program, I'd pay the money anyway. But the reality is if we get invited, this would allow if it's under $50. And most of those are $4 and $5 kinds of tickets. So that would be exempt from this limit now because it's still under the $50. I mean, we'd have to keep track of it. They couldn't keep giving you lots and lots of them. But up to $50, I could go to some of that entertainment in the local things. And if I was a local person and the mayor and they wanted me to be at this thing, I could go and welcome everybody and say thanks for being at the play or whatever, and that wouldn't have a problem without paying or not paying.
Chair Roblin, you're correct. Now,
okay.
some of the examples you gave, such as a mayor being asked to do some type of ceremonial purpose, that is already allowed
okay.
in here underneath another exception. What SB 30 simply does is it eliminates the ban on entertainment, but you are still limited to the $50 from that source in a year. So whether you take entertainment or some other type of gift, it's still a $50.
Okay. Representative Gerard.
Yeah. Ron, if the entity that gives you the under $50 gift is not required to report such a gift, then how will you ever know whether the elected official properly responded?
Chair Roblin, President Gerard, See, now you're going to give away my secret on how we're able to regulate this with such a small agency across the state of Oregon. Essentially, the people are watching you. That's what ends up happening. We'll receive a signed complaint from somebody saying that they saw you at an event that maybe cost more than $50, or that we've seen you at the same event and we believe that you're over the $50. And so that's usually what it is. A citizen will complain to us. Our agency, since it's not reported, it's not something that the agency would audit. So,
okay, thank you.
It's the citizens of the state keep a close eye on their public officials.
I will not keep your secret.
Okay. And the lobbyists, however, still do have to report anything that they do. Is that not correct? So, I mean, you could find it that way if they actually showed up on one of their forms that you'd given more than $50 in a year to an official.
Chair Rowland, you're correct. And I'm sorry, I was using your example of a school
local.
Wanting you to go to their play.
Right.
But, you know, lobbyists are still required to report on a quarterly basis anything that's paid on lobbying to either legislative officials or executive officials.
Right. Okay. Representative Berger.
Ron, in this instance, if you go, let me give you an example. You know how full of what-ifs this is. There's a fundraiser that I go to twice a year for the same organization. In both cases, they feed you, and then they expect you to bring your checkbook. Okay. Now, can I go to both, even though combined they're going to be paying more than, this organization is paying more than $50 worth of food? Believe me, it's costing me more than $50 to sit in the seat because you don't go without your checkbook. But technically, could I be in violation of this if I go same organization, two different meals? Everybody else gets a free meal too, but they all bring their checkbook too.
Chair Rowland, Representative Berger, it's difficult for me to say whether you could or could not. I mean, the agency has always looked at the cost of the event as what would somebody other than a public official pay to be there. And what I think what you're saying is nobody pays anything to be there.
Just bring your check.
Giving some food. And so this actually may be the exception that was changed in 3011 that allowed for food that was incidental and there was no cost associated with it.
Right.
So, I mean, if nobody was charged to get in the room, that's really where the cost is at. I mean, we're not asking each public official to break down how much the food actually costs.
Okay.
So, you know, if the public is allowed to go into it at no cost and basically be solicited for donations.
If you'd answered differently, I'd have sent you to this event.
Welcome to the event.
So, In that event, they are actually using the proceeds of the fundraiser to pay for that, probably. So you are paying for it if you're giving up a donation. So I understand that one. Thanks.
Underneath Senate Bill 30, it adds some executive officials to the SEI filing list. And I think Mr. Watson actually gave the exact number. He was more prepared than I don't know the exact number. Underneath House Bill 3011, it's much more extensive. It looks like to me it adds all the agency heads for the state of Oregon, and it also it adds elected school board members to the requirement to file a statement of economic interest. That's the difference that I see between the two. Underneath Senate Bill 30 eliminates the requirement to file a quarterly public official disclosure. So the QPODs would be eliminated underneath Senate Bill 30. House Bill 3011 eliminates the QPODs for all except executive and legislative filers. And I believe the reason behind this, and Representative Berger can correct me if I'm wrong, is that they wanted to try to match, I think what you had talked about earlier, is that the donations from legislators to legislators or executive officials, because in the definition of lobbying, you can only lobby a legislator or executive official. And so it would give the agency a chance to actually audit those reports. In other words, a lobbyist may say they expended X number of dollars on a legislative official. We could pull the legislative official's quarterly report and make sure that they actually filed for receiving that amount of money. So that's the difference between the two. SB 30 eliminates the QPODs. House Bill 3011 alters the requirements.
Representative Berger.
But nothing in 30 eliminates the QPODs for the lobbyists?
Chair Roblin, Representative Berger, there aren't Q-pods for lobbyists, but the quarterly reporting for lobbyists is not eliminated in Senate Bill 30. They are still required to file quarterly, as is the entities that hire the lobbyists. And so they will be filing at the same time.
But what this means in terms of transparency is we are back to where we were before, which was that the public doesn't get transparency until the SEI is filed, in terms of marrying up any trips with the lobby. I just want the committee to know what were the original purpose of the Q-Pod was to be able to marry up lobbying expenses with legislative reporting, and it never was intended to involve local government at all. And in 3011, Representative Stigler and I said, okay, if that's the purpose, then let's go back to that and have legislators go ahead and file, and statewide officials, which is less than 100 people, file that quarterly report so that there would be timely transparency to the public if any trips were taken and who paid for it, and when you took it would be reported every quarter instead of once a year. Under this bill, we are back to once a year reporting for legislators, and the Q-Pod just goes away. And not that I'm not happy to make it go away. I just want you to be real clear as to the difference.
Thank you. And I'd also like, I appreciate you saying that, because I hope I didn't give people the impression that the information from the Q-Pod goes away. It simply is moved to an annual filing.
Right.
But the requirement to file quarterly reports would be eliminated underneath Senate Bill 30. You just simply file it on your annual statement, such as prior to the changes in 2007. Okay. The Statement of Economic Interest Sources of Income lists Senate Bill 30, change that to, currently right now we have the five most significant sources of income. There's been some problems with that, and people want the definition of significant. Senate Bill 30 attacks that problem, and just having people put on their statement of economic interest all sources of income over 10% of their total household income. So they would list all sources above 10%. Underneath House Bill 3011, you would list significant sources of income over $3,000. So House Bill 3011 essentially just puts a floor and defines significant as being everything above that floor of $3,000.
Which, with Senate Bill 30, then a person making $30,000 would be at the same limit as the person in this one. Anybody owe 10%, right? So if a person made $100,000, they would have to report anything that was more than $10,000.
Right.
In 30. 10%.
I was told there'd be no math.
I mean, in Senate Bill 30, it's 10% of your income.
Correct.
From any one source. So that means if you made $100,000, 10% of that is $10,000. If it was less than $10,000, you wouldn't report it.
Every source of income, Chair Roblin, above $10,000 would be reported on the statement of economic interest.
Correct.
Whether that amount is one source, two sources, or...
Right.
I think the math, you actually can't get too high because...
Right.
You run out of space on that 10%.
Yeah.
It could end up being, say, eight sources of income, though.
Okay.
That you get above $10,000.
Correct. Yeah. Whereas in 30, it's anything $3,000
or
more.
No, $3,000
or more. Right. Okay.
And I will say that this goes back to essentially the way it was before 2007, except before 2007, you were required to file all your income between 10 and 49%.
Right.
And then everything above 50%. This just kind of gets rid of that split in the middle and just requires people, puts the floor at 10% and has people file everything above that. So there isn't any more defining of the word significant. So
okay.
That was their strategy in Senate Bill 10.
And I want to ask again, where's the language, Gina? I've had it at one point.
It's section 6 on page 10.
Yep. Line 31 and then 32.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
That should be section 6. Okay.
Which one? Section 6?
Yes.
Section 6.
Line
it starts on
31
line
and 32. And yeah, but 31 and 32 is where it's
at. Okay, there it is.
Yep.
Names, principal, adjunct. Who's 10% more of the total household income? Pretty straightforward.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
I'm going to go ahead and put these next couple together. There's a little bit of difference between the two, but currently staff advisory opinions is an opinion that is actually written by myself as the executive director and signed by myself that essentially gives the staff's advice. It's a formal advisory opinion, but is not voted on by the commission. Currently, the agency has to give consideration that they've given this advice before finding a violation, and that's currently what the statute says. Underneath the changes underneath Senate Bill 30, the staff advice would be given safe harbor such as an official commission advisory opinion. But they still could get a violation, but that violation could not rise above the penalty of a reprimand letter of education. So in other words, there could never be any kind of civil penalty if you followed staff advice and we gave the wrong advice. On that same note, currently the commission puts out a guide for public officials. That guide for public officials would essentially become safe harbor. In other words, it would become voted on by the commission. It would become essentially a commission advisory opinion. And anybody that followed that public official guide in good faith would be safe from any prosecution or any violations from the commission. Now, under House Bill 3011, there was no change to those type of provisions.
Representative Berger.
Are you actually publishing it now, Ron?
Chair Roblin, Representative Berger, yes, we do publish.
When I came into this process, no such thing had actually been published.
Yes, we have a guide for public officials. Now, I will say with the changes that could take place underneath, well, there's going to be changes this session, but with those changes, and again, going back to the very beginning with the change to legislative administrative interest, the guide that we currently have will not be safe harbor. It will have to be pulled, and we'll have to rewrite that guide to reflect those changes. And but once that guide is out, and we'll get it out as quickly as we can.
And is it posted on?
It is on our website, yes.
That's the critical thing. Thank you.
Yes. Underneath, under the gift provisions, underneath C, C was a gift exception around token gifts of appreciation. There was no changes in Senate Bill 30, but House Bill 3011 added flowers and plants to this acceptable token gifts.
Yeah, can I
specifically listed?
I just want to. I think that the question I have here is about gifts. We oftentimes get dignitaries from other countries, and there are times when we go to other countries and they give gifts. And depending on the culture, some of those exceed the $50 limit at times. If we take that gift and give it back to a nonprofit or the state or whatever, the school, as a principal, I would turn it over to the school. We can accept that and give that, pass that through to the to an organization. Is that not correct? Even the way it's always been?
That is correct, sir.
Okay. Because I, you know, from my perspective, knowing some of those cultures, it's embarrassing to not take them. So I want to have a way to take it, be very thankful, and then pass it on so I don't have to. Okay. And that is totally within the rule. Okay. Very good.
You just simply accept it on behalf of whoever you represent.
The school or the whatever. Okay.
Underneath Senate Bill 30, the electronic reporting system and searchable database was moved till January of 2013. Underneath House Bill 3011, it does not move that. It simply removes the searchable database from electronic filing system. I just want to say a few words on this. The reason that it had to move was in the rebalance for 7-9, the money that was there was had to be used for other purposes.
Right.
And so under House Bill 3011, without the removal of the requirement for the agency to be operative on January 1st of 2010, we would not be able to build that system
right.
by that time because we don't have the
That'd
funds to do that. So Senate Bill 30 recognizes that and just delays the implementation of that, and the agency is required to come back in 2011 and basically ask to reinstate the database.
Yes.
Senate Bill 30 adds tribes or corporations to the reporting requirements underneath the F exception.
Okay.
It also, underneath relative, it adds domestic partner and candidate. Senate Bill 30 adds tribes and corporations. House Bill 3011 raises the reporting threshold from $50 to $100 underneath the F exception. So
okay.
you would not have to report unless you received $100 or more. So that's the difference between those two. Underneath relative, Senate Bill 30 adds the addition of domestic partner and candidate. House Bill 3011 just adds the addition of candidate, not domestic partner. And Senate Bill 30 does not make any changes in this area, but House Bill 3011 removes the additional sanctions under ORS 244.380 and 244.390 for failure to file a statement of economic interest. So there were some other sanctions other than
Mr. Chair. If this can fit in this other bill, this is a critical thing we need to do, okay? The sanctions basically are so overreaching in that statute that I don't think any of us would be comfortable with it. It basically gives, in statute, the Ethics Commission the ability to just simply take a government official and take them out of their elected position the way it's written. And I don't think the Government Ethics Commission wants that kind of power. And I think we need to be very careful. And that's why it's in that bill. And I think it's a critical thing to come out. If it has to run as a separate bill, I think it's a critical thing to put in there.
Chair Robin, I agree with Representative Berger. I think it's definitely an area that we need to look at. I don't believe it was discussed in any of the hearings that I was with underneath Senate Bill 30. I think this is the bill that has actually looked at this issue. But I would encourage the members to actually look at those statutes.
Okay. What section is that?
It's in Chapter 244. It's in. You actually need to go out and look at the statutes. It's not in.
Right. No, but where is it referenced here? Because that has the statutes in it.
It's not in 30. It's only in.
In 3011.
It's in 3011.
Okay.
And it's Oregon Revised Statute 244.380 and .390. And
we will look those over.
I know both of these created some angst out there with some of the local officials during this SEI period back in 2008.
Mr. Chair, when I made an appointment at 4 o'clock, I had no idea that this would be the discussion that was coming because it had to be made over a month ago. So I am apologize for the fact that I must leave. But believe me, I will be reviewing all of this carefully. And so far, I think it's really good. With a few other things that we need to get in here, but they may not have to go in this vehicle.
Right. We may be able to deal that in a different vehicle.
Okay. And I'm through with mine.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. Is that it?
That is it for me.
Any clarifications you would like? And I guess that one of the questions before Representative Berger, as she's leaving, the definition of candidate in both of these would do the same thing? I mean, what we found is that there was this little gap in time between the election and the taking of office that didn't seem to be covered for a candidate because this person was was representative-elect or whatever now, was no longer a candidate because the election was over, but they hadn't taken over office yet, so they weren't an elected official yet, so there was this gap. And do both of them take care of that period of time so that gifts and all this stuff continues to be in effect?
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, both definitions they're from Chapter 260.005, and
okay.
in that definition of candidate for purposes of election law and campaign finance, it takes basically the A part of that. It just takes the top part. And in both of these, they say the same thing, except for one phrase. The Senate side was uncomfortable with the way it read in, so I moved the phrase to the back. That's the only difference between the definitions in Senate Bill 30 and House Bill 3011. I wasn't aware of that situation that it was seeking to address, so I would have to look at that more. But
okay, thank you.
Yeah. I do have a few other clarifications I would like to make. I don't know if I have a very logical order to go in. In the changes in 244.020, which is the big definition section and where the definition of gift is and the exceptions, I think this made it clear, but I've read in different newspapers that Senate Bill 30 adds candidate to the ethics laws, and I don't think that's true. I think the ethics laws, Senate Bill 10 from 2007, actually applied the gift limits to candidates, but there was a missing definition of what candidate means and who they are. And if a candidate tried to look at the gift laws and say, well, how do these apply to me? They were only written in terms of public officials. So we just added. So in some ways, those are kind of technical changes that go through, and that's in both of these bills.
Okay.
And that's why it's there.
So the way it's written now, it's clearly what we thought the intent was of 10, but now it clearly states that by using the definitions that were already in a case in public law with respect to what a candidate was. Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
Representative, I'm not quite sure I got the answer to whether 3011 and 30 both address the need for identification of a candidate. Both do?
Both address, I'm sorry, the definition of candidate? Is that?
Yeah, both Senate Bill 30 and 3011 both address that satisfactorily.
Yes, they both define, so a candidate could look at the laws and say, am I a candidate, and I could read the definition. Okay. So yeah, they are defined for purposes of the ethics laws for the first time in both bills. Speaking of definitions, in Senate Bill 30, it does add domestic partner was actually part of Senate Bill 10, but in the definition of relative, it goes on and it would say, you know, the spouse of the public official or candidate, and then it said the domestic partner of the public official or candidate, but then it only lists the siblings or the children of the spouse, and so we just added domestic partner through there, again, just to be consistent. I doubt they were interpreting it that differently, but technically that's the way the law read. So that's what that change does. Let's see. Oh, and in Section 7 of Senate Bill 30, for the additional statement of economic interest, as Ron Burson pointed out, there is still a reference to government agency in there. And we've removed all other references because of the new definition of legislative or administrative interest. But I'd like to point out that interest is still not, even for this, it's still not in the governmental agency. The only place the agency is mentioned is if the source has does business or could reasonably expect it to do business with the agency in which you work for. So it's different than having a legislative or administrative interest in the agency. It's just identifying, you know, you might have to file this statement if your agency does business with the source. So I imagine, I didn't take that out. I don't know if there didn't seem to be much interest in that, but it's different than applying the legislative or administrative interest to that agency. Does that make sense at all?
A little. How about to the person that has to interpret it, does it make sense?
Chair Rowland, I mean, one of the things, I know there's a purpose of these changes is to try to make some clarification. And this agency is really trying to kind of change its focus from enforcement to training. And you know, just like, you know, Gina's having a hard time here is, you know, I have to go out to the public officials that are required to file these SEIs and say, you have a legislative administrative interest, it's in your decision or vote, or it's in your action or vote of the person or of the public official, wherever we land there. But if you're an SEI filer and you get to that portion of the SEI that is around income from a source, now that legislative administrator, so that source could be a source that does business with your government agency. And so it's another definition that we're throwing out. And that's the only reason I brought it up is because the agency would be required to kind of take the SEI filers off and not to confuse the rest of the room and actually try to explain that to them, that if a business is going to do business with your agency or with your government body, then you derive income from that person or from that business,
you have to disclose
list
it.
Them on your SEI.
Okay. To me, that makes some sense.
It just takes more clarification, but
okay.
I just wanted to talk about some of the where it changed a little bit.
But what you're saying previous, the definition would have, they wouldn't have had to file that necessarily. This puts it back in for those agencies that are directly doing business with a company, earning some money from a company that they may do business with.
Currently, the definition is that.
Well, it's very close.
Well, it's in the government agency,
right.
in other words. So I'm just saying that in that portion for legislative administrative interest, or at least the ideas around legislative administrative interest, it still may be closer to the old way than the new way.
For those agencies and people who work in the agencies. For people who work in those agencies only, or for everybody?
Just for the people that would file statements of economic interest.
Gotcha. Okay.
So there's approximately 5,500 people that
right.
would file those. I'm sorry, go ahead.
So do you see that the same way?
No.
Well, I think I deliberately took out has a legislative or administrative in the governmental agency. I removed those words. So I thought it was fairly straightforward. You would know if you do business with this person. It's just,
okay.
That's all. But anyway,
okay.
You can,
okay.
It's
that makes
just
some
additional.
Sense.
I just wanted to clarify. No, no, I doubt I have.
Okay.
And then I think the other, let's see. Oh, I just wanted to point out that in Senate Bill or House Bill 3011, I think they also remove the gift limit. They take out the $50 altogether and say no gifts. So I thought that was significant.
Yes.
Put that in there. And I think that's all, unless you would like me to. I know there's kind of some in the applicability sections and when this would take effect, and I don't know if you want me to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, that's the amendment, and I would like you to talk about the amendment that we have.
So the amendment replaces Section 27 of Senate Bill 30, which, again, is way in the back on page 21. It retains that language closely, but not quite. But in effect, regardless of when this becomes effective, whether it's before April 15th or just after, right now Senate Bill 30 becomes operative and starts applying January 1, 2010. So, you know, that's when all the quarterlies would go away and you'd file your new statement of economic interest. And as you all know, that April 15th is the deadline for the current statements of economic interest for 2009. And so a lot of people probably have already filed those, given the date. And so right now it's still the law that you have to include your the names of the members of your household and your relatives on that statement. So this amendment in subsection 2 basically says that anybody who does provide those names, not only may the Ethics Commission not disclose those names, but also that they can't be the basis of filing any sort of complaint, or you can't be found to be outside of the law for not complying. So that's what the amendment does.
So if we had a judge or something who decided they didn't want to send it in and they felt they didn't have to because they already had a lawsuit out there that says we're holding her off until we do, it would make that moot, basically.
Exactly.
Okay. Other questions for these two witnesses? So, I want to thank both of you very much for walking us through this. I really appreciate it. You read it over and over again as you get ready for this, and then you wonder what you just read and how did it really affect the other one. And so I appreciate you having done that and making a little clearer what the two did differently and what they do the same. So I actually very much appreciate the time you've put in and helping us clarify that.
Thank you.
Thanks. So with that short explanation, we have a few people who have signed up to speak.
what we have to do is open it and carry it over, and we at least have to start it on the last session.
Oh, okay.
Or, I suppose,
but we can have a move in amendments.
Well, we don't, you can look at it to any extent you want, just don't finish it.
Oh, okay.
I mean, if you, somewhere in the coordination, because we don't have the amendments. That being, you just have to open it up, or not get there at all, just carry it to the public hearing.
With that, we'll have Scott Winkles, Paul Snyder, and Genoa Ingram. Come on forward. It might be those ones.
That's an internal.
It might be.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, Scott Winkles, representing the League of Oregon Cities, appearing in support of Senate Bill 30. The first thing I'd like to do before I get into my prepared remarks is express the gratitude of the members of the League of Oregon Cities and the willingness of the legislature to take up this complicated and sometimes volatile issue. It is greatly appreciated. Back in September, the League of Oregon Cities met in their general membership meeting, and they approved the following principle as to what they think Oregon's ethics policies ought to look like. The League of Oregon Cities believes that Oregon's ethics policies must be just, easily understood, and safeguard the public so as to not jeopardize the willingness of private citizens to serve and effectively participate on city councils or on boards and commissions. The assessment of the League of Oregon Cities that SB 30 meets this criteria. First, we believe that Senate Bill 30 provides some needed justice to the statute and upon enactment, a city leader will no longer have to list irrelevant family information in publicly accessible forms. That requirement would go would be retroactive. This was the chief complaint of many city leaders across Oregon with the passage of Senate Bill 10. We heard some truly traumatized and emotional stories from city leaders. In one case, a planning commissioner in a coastal community had offered shelter to an adult daughter who was fleeing an abusive relationship and didn't want to list her as a household member, clearly jeopardizing her safety. So this is a key component in Senate Bill 30. We also believe it brings some justice to the statute and that city leaders will be able to attend events in their official capacity and once again be active in their communities and attend events. Under Senate Bill 10, public officials could only accept attendance in an event if they were appearing on a formal program or in as part of a panel or answering questions. This impact essentially paralyzed a lot of public officials across Oregon, and they felt that they couldn't go to these events, they couldn't be active, they couldn't stay in contact with their constituents for fear of inadvertently violating Oregon's ethics laws, and we think this change is necessary. And again, we also believe that Senate Bill 30 would offer some needed justice into the Senate Bill 10 aspect, and that the gift limits would no longer apply to the public officials' professional life, to their other activities, and allowing them to go out and do their business. You know, we have a planning commissioner in Southern Oregon who owns a hardware store as part of a national chain, a co-op, I believe, and they do events and they get tickets to golf tournaments and these sorts of things. This is part of their daily operations, their normal functions of business, and this was now allowable. Senate Bill 30, it also makes Oregon's ethics policies more easily understood. Clarifying the definition of legislative administration and interest so that it applies to the ability and the authority of a decision maker to actually benefit another party financially instead of applying it agency-wide clears up a lot of confusion among Oregon's public officials, not just at the elected leader side, but also among the 200,000 other public officials, the employees, the volunteers, people who may not know that their agency has done something or could do something that's going to benefit another person economically. And we also recognize that Oregon's ethics laws will not always be crystal clear, and it's not always going to be possible to make something that's not going to require some interpretation. So Senate Bill 30 provides some safe harbors and some protections for the person who, for the public official who relies on the advice of the commission or relies on the advice of the manual. And also, Senate Bill 30 still safeguards the interest of the public. The league contends that Senate Bill 30 does nothing to weaken the underlying intent of Senate Bill 10 or other ethics reform or to House Bill 2595. We'd like to point out that while the gift ban on entertainment may have gone away, the total aggregate limit from a single source remains at $50. There was some conversations taking place on the Senate side about raising that. That's been rejected. Again, Senate Bill 30 does not roll back the requirement that all city officials in Oregon have to file statements of economic interest. That was a topic that was discussed at some length by the League of Oregon Cities policy advisory committees and by its board of directors, and it was not something that rolling that back was something we could support. So those 97 cities that previously did not have to file that were brought into Senate Bill 10, it's not something we are asking for that be rolled back. We think it's appropriate that city officials do file and do provide this information, so long as it's relevant and there's a nexus to their office. Under Senate Bill 30, trips and expenses provided to a public official by an outside source will still be reportable, just not quarterly, and then reported annually and folded into the annual report. I mean, the fact of the matter is, for the vast majority of Oregon city officials, they were turning in these quarterly reports and they were blank. I mean, most city officials weren't taking trips. They were not receiving any of the reportable income. It was simply a nuisance and an exposure to a sanction that they were concerned about. In closing, the League would respectfully suggest that a complicated ethics law that is not clear generates a mindset where a person is thinking, do I comply? Am I in compliance with the statute? We would contend that an ethics policy that is fair and is clearly understood generates the mindset of a person asking, is what I'm doing right? I think Senate Bill 30 gets us away from the former and towards the latter. And with that, I would look forward to your questions.
Thank you very much. We'll go to the next person and then... And while you're doing that... I'll wait till Representative Reed gets back because I have. Just so people know, I am going to open a work session on this bill so that I can carry it over to Friday. I don't think that we're going to get to put this amendment in, but we need to continue to get ready to do it. It's not posted yet, but if I open this work sessions and move them, they'll be available there. So if you see me do that, it's not to change. I just need to take care of some procedural things so that we make notice to everybody that we're going to continue this conversation to Friday. If you looked at Friday's agenda, there was only one thing on it already, so this we kept some room available if we needed to continue this. So with that, we'll let whoever wants to go next. But I'll wait till I get my quorum back here before I do that.
Great. Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Genoa Ingram representing the Oregon Special Districts Association, the Oregon Volunteer Firefighters Association, and the Oregon Fire District Directors Association. We first want to thank the committee and Professor Watson for the work on this bill. I thought the League representative did an excellent job covering our points. I just want to reiterate just a couple. It was very, very important to my clients that the Guide to Public Officials was treated as a staff opinion. It used to be when we received that guide for public officials, there was a disclaimer on the front that said, if you adhere to this, you know, then that creates a safe harbor for you. And shortly after passage of Senate Bill 10, we waited eagerly for the revisions of the Guide to Public Officials, only to see that disclaimer was gone, much to our horror. So we're happy to see that back. I can't say enough about the clarification of definition of legislative or administrative interest. It was, you know, obviously you've heard all the horror stories, and someday if you want some entertainment, go out with any of the local government lobbyists, and we can regale you with all kinds of interesting stories about the problems that caused. But we just believe that this bill goes a long, long way in removing the chilling effect of individuals to serve as local government servants. And it also not only protects local government officials, but it protects the spirit of that citizen legislature that we all hold so dear and enables, you know, all of you to participate in your local community activities. And with that, not to be repetitious, I just want to say thank you and encourage quick movement on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And at this moment, since we have a quorum here, I am going to open a work session on Senate Bill 30. And I'm going to make an announcement that that work session will be held over to Friday. Also, a public hearing will probably be held over till Friday if we need more time. I'm also going to open, just in case, Senate Bill 85 for both a work session and a public hearing. And the reason for that is to let people know that we will hold that over as well to Friday. And with that, I'll close the work session and public hearing on Senate Bill 85, and we can close the work session on Senate Bill 30, and we'll go back to our hearing on Senate Bill 30, and hopefully I did all that in such a way that we are notifying everybody that we're going to continue this to Friday. And with that, thank you, and we'll hear the next. And we had a quorum. We have more members that have to leave because there's a Ways and Means hearing that's going to go be taking place that takes them away, and I wanted to make sure we did that before they left us. But we'll continue the hearing. So, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Paul Snyder, representing Association of Oregon Counties. I agree with my colleagues as to our gratitude for the legislative effort to try to clarify this legislation. And I'm speaking, by the way, in support of Senate Bill 30.
Okay.
We agree that it's a very valuable form of progress. I would just like to, rather than echo other concerns that or positions that have already been made, just to clarify a couple of things that had been problematic in the past that I believe are cured by this bill. The reference to the secretary who received advice that that secretary could not accept an engagement ring from an individual who worked for a business that was regulated by the public entity. That would no longer be a problem under this legislation because of the definition of legislative or administrative interest. The same would apply to the clerk who works in a separate division of a state department than the division that regulates her boyfriend's business, that for two reasons, the entertainment limit is lifted to $50 from zero, so she can now go to the movies with him. And the second piece of it would have to do with the fact that she doesn't have a decision-making role or a vote when it comes to what happens to his business, and so for that reason, he can take her to the movies as long as he wants to. The reference to the birthday party of the small children who are going to go to the movies, for the same reason, in that situation, if it's a parent of a child and the parent operates a business that is somehow involved with the school district, that, once again, that prohibition against going to the movies no longer would apply for the same reasons as before. And then the neighbor-to-neighbor barbecue, when one person has somebody over who's a neighbor, and the other person invites the same person back who's a neighbor, can I entertain my neighbor now for that same reason? Yes, you can, because you no longer have, or that neighbor doesn't have a legislative or administrative interest in you individually, in your decision-making capacity or in your vote. The bill that we described on Monday that we testified in support of, House Bill 2915, also included a provision that would exempt members of advisory committees to government from the provisions of the ethics laws that apply to public officials if those advisory committee members have no capacity or authority to take action for the governmental body. I'm still not quite clear on how that is impacted by Senate Bill 30, and we'd really appreciate clarification on that point. And that is to say, does an individual who gives advice to the government, and that's all that person does, and we have lots of advisory committees all over the place, does that person have a decision-making role in terms of Senate Bill 30's application? I would submit that that person should not be considered to have that kind of a role. I don't think it's envisioned by this. But we very much appreciate clarification from the committee on that point as well. And if it did break in that direction, then I don't think we would have a need for House Bill 2915. At least not that piece.
Thank you. Any questions for these witnesses? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ron, would you like to come back and answer that particular question from your perspective? Do you think, did you hear, I'll restate it. Because of the way we've written in Senate Bill 30, the legislative intent, would an advisory person have the same, if they advise a group, and it's only advisory, they don't take a vote or make the decision, but they advise in that decision, would they fall under the ethics bill the way it is written with this intent?
Chair Roblin, I think it actually goes further than just advisory committees. I think that legislative administrative interest under Senate Bill 30 is in the decision or vote of the public official.
Okay.
And so it has to be distinct economic interest that's tied to the decision or vote of that public official. And if an advisory group or a member of that advisory group does not decide or vote, then I don't think that they would have a legislative administrative interest. But I think it also holds true to the secretary that was mentioned here, if they're not deciding or voting, right, or any other public official that does not have a role that they decide or vote in, that they would not have a legislative administrative interest.
Okay.
And therefore, they would not be restricted in the gifts they can receive.
Okay. Thank you very much. Martha Pellegrino, Kathy Eaton, and Janice Thompson. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Martha Pellegrino, representing the City of Portland. I have just submitted a written letter from the City Attorney, Linda Meng, in support of Senate Bill 30. The thrust of the letter, I think, was adequately captured by the other local government representatives who just testified, in that Senate Bill 30 goes a long way in clarifying some of the issues that have led to ambiguities and problems implementing the law. And as you can imagine, an entity the size of the City of Portland, the more we educated our city officials as to what the law was, the more questions received by our city attorney's office. And they, I think they were able to answer about half of them with some clarity. So I wanted to echo what was said about really appreciating the work that this body has done. All of the bills that were submitted really and thoughtfully tried to address some of those implementation issues, and I think Senate Bill 30 goes quite a long way in capturing those. So I will not reiterate all of the issues that have been raised. I'd be happy to answer any questions, though, if the committee has any.
Thank you very much. Kathy Eaton.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, Kathy Eaton, Governance Coordinator for the League of Women Voters of Oregon. We have watched with a great deal of interest as this bill morphed from one page to, 20?
Yeah.
We feel it's all to the good. It addresses several ethics issues that were first enacted in Senate Bill 10 in 2007. And as you know, it's now one of several bills that is coming before you as revisions to Senate Bill 10. Senate Bill 30 originally sought to remove the necessity for filing statements of economic interest from hundreds of volunteers and distant relatives of officials. The amended version does that, 30-A. But it also adds candidates to the list of persons who must file, and the League supports that addition. There is considerable clarification of gift without changing the limit, and reporting requirements have been modified. The list of officials required to file the SEI have been enlarged, and the requirement for local government officials to report has been retained, which is not the case particularly in 3011, which we objected to. The League continues to be concerned about transparency and accountability in government. Senate Bill 30A brings in candidates for reporting and requires specific reporting from all officials as outlined in Section 6. While it may be onerous, it is important in the efforts to bring back public trust. The phrase administrative or legislative interest is clarified, which was very important, along with additions to what is or what is not a gift. SJ 30 joins the growing list of ethics bills being heard by both the House and the Senate Rules Committees. We commend that committees, after due deliberation, please recommend the best of all of them into one proposal that for further discussion. Most of us recognize that Senate Bill 10 would be revisited this session. We hope that the current proposals can lead to a stronger ethics program. Thank you.
Thank you.
Janice Thompson, for Oregon. I just want to indicate that both Senate Bill 30 and the various House bills, excellent work on kind of figuring out any number of things. I think definitely support Senate Bill 30 and recommend that it move to the extent that some things in some of the House legislation have been identified that are not dealt with there. I guess, use other vehicles and just get 30 moving or keep it moving. And in particular, wanted to just identify that the organizationally particularly interested, particularly pleased in how the doing away with the ban on entertainment was addressed in Senate Bill 30. That was a last minute thing that occurred in the Senate Bill 10 deliberation on the House side after it had moved into work session. So, if I'd had the opportunity to have spoken against that, it was, in terms of like hitting the sweet spot, that didn't quite do it. And that has been addressed, I think, in Senate Bill 30 in the appropriate way. And that's it.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel? Thank you all for being here. Bruce Bishop.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Bruce Bishop. Thank you for the opportunity to testify this afternoon on Senate Bill 30. I'm appearing on my own behalf and not as a lobbyist, which I have been for the last 21-some years. I testified earlier this week on House Bill 3011. I believe that bill has some good ideas in it. I believe Senate Bill 30 has some good ideas. Those ideas can be melded together successfully into one piece of legislative action. But I'd like to urge you to not be content just with doing that, but to make some additional contributions to legislative policy in this area. Let me explain just briefly what I have in mind for your consideration. As I've testified previously, the current laws governing the conduct of public officials are so complicated and confusing that no one really knows what it is they're supposed to do. When you read the law, it becomes circular. And there are no clear policy declarations of what is appropriate and inappropriate conduct. That's the result of years of legislative fine-tuning of the fundamental Oregon government ethics laws. I have two ideas that I'd like you to consider to simplify and make the law more understandable and more supportable by both public officials and the public. First, you should underscore the existing and longstanding policy that's expressed in ORS 244040 that makes it illegal to use public office for private gain. That's the principle that underlies our ethics laws. That principle is hard to find in the ORS. You'll go through a lot of definitions, there are a lot of other provisions, and it gets lost. You need to make sure that everybody knows that that's the paramount goal that you seek. public officials should not use their public office for private gain, period. A lot of the language in the law confuses that principle by creating exceptions and definitions and other things. I would urge you to express that principle as clearly as possible to make sure that everybody knows what the expectation is. The challenge in this area is for the state to regulate conduct that crosses the line between private and public activity. That's not an easy line to draw, but I think it's one that you can clarify if you make clear what the goal of ethics policy is in the state. It seems to me there are really two elements of our policy. One is that public officials should declare their conflicts of interest when they're taking action as a public official that might affect their private interest. Those conflict of interest laws are pretty well developed and enforced. And the second is that public officials should periodically disclose their economic interests through some sort of report. Those are the two ways, I think, that we will be most successful in carrying out an ethics law in this state. I would urge you to focus on those two elements, leave the rest behind, either to the Ethics Commission to develop by rule or for the courts to define in specific cases, but don't get caught in the trap of trying to over-legislate in this area, which I'm afraid is what we've been doing for the last 15 years, if not for the last 35 or 40 years. Second, I think you should prohibit the use of campaign funds for official purposes. Campaign funds are given for the purposes of campaigns, and they should be used only for campaign purposes. Current law allows them to be used for some other purposes. I think you should put a stop to that, and that restricting campaign funds to campaign purposes is probably the one step you could take that would send a signal that you're serious about a policy that doesn't blur the line between public and private obligations. I would urge you to consider those two approaches as you deliberate on Senate Bill 30 and House Bill 3011. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions of this witness? Thank you. Oh, Representative Noel.
Mr. Chair, not a question, but just a thank you for continuing to pay attention to this. You've put a lot of thought into this, and I think it's admirable. Thanks.
I agree.
Thank you.
Thank you. That takes care of the witnesses. Is there anyone here who has not spoken who just can't wait to jump up and be part of this discussion? Seeing no one stepping forward, we're going to close the public hearing on House Senate Bill 30, recognizing that we have already carried over the public hearing to Friday so that people know that we're addressing that. And we're going to open a public hearing or reopen a public hearing on Senate Bill 85. And we'll have a short explanation. I don't know who we have to speak on. Nope, nobody.
Thank you, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. Senate Bill 85 requires the Oregon Government Ethics Commission to keep confidential all information considered before approving a motion to proceed on its own motion. It allows any person aggrieved to petition for a civil penalty of up to $1,000, declares an emergency, takes effect on passage. Current law allows the Oregon Government Ethics Commission to investigate possible violations of lobby and ethics laws, either based on a complaint received or on the Commission's own motion in lieu of receiving a complaint. The Commission is required to keep confidential all information considered before proceeding on a complaint received. This measure makes that same requirement applicable when the commission investigates without a complaint. It does so by utilizing the same language, adding language in two places in the statute.
Thank you. With that, Ron Burson.
Lost our audience.
Yeah, we lost our audience.
Can't imagine more.
Thank you, Chair Roblin and members of the committee. I'll be brief on this. Just for a little background, the commission is able to open up a preliminary view, which is the initial stage of the complaint process, in two ways. One way is they received a signed complaint from anybody complained about a public official in the state of Oregon. The second way is that the commission can open up a preliminary view on its own motion. In other words, the commission votes to open up that preliminary view. And that is when we have, in the absence of a signed complaint, but we have information from credible sources of an ethics violation. That could be a police report. It could be some type of reporting by a newspaper. It could be other credible sources that come before the commission. Currently, under law, the preliminary review does not start until the commission actually votes. And so the confidential period that's afforded a public official during preliminary review does not start until the actual vote. What this bill does is it moves that confidential period back to the time that the agency initially sends out the letter to the public official saying that this information that we receive will be considered by the commission for its own motion on whatever date that's going to be in that commission meeting. And so what we have found in the past is that a lot of the information that we receive is a public document. The problem is that once we contact the person, they send us documents that are now part of that preliminary review, but the preliminary review hasn't started, and so those documents are available to the public with a public records request. What ends up happening is the public official ends up getting, judged before the commission ever even sees the information. In other words, that information is brought forth to the public inside of their jurisdictions. And so I think it was just when this was all set up to give that confidential period during preliminary review to folks, I think it was just kind of an oversight in the commission put this bill forward to try to correct that problem.
Any questions for Mr. Burson? Thank you very much. No one else has signed up on this bill, so we're going to close that public hearing, recognizing that we did carry over both this public hearing and a work session on this bill to Friday. Thank you. Any other business that you have here? If not, we are going to close our rules hearing. And thank you very much. Thanks.